The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're diving deep into a book that, well, it didn't just describe the ocean, it fundamentally shifted how we think about our planet.
That's right. We're talking about Rachel Carson's landmark work, The Sea Around Us.
And it's not just, you know, a list of facts about water and fish. Carson called it a biography of the ocean.
A biography, exactly. Its origins, its life, its power, and how it shapes literally everything on Earth.
It came out way back in 1951, so why pick it up now? Why does it still feel so, well, urgent?
Because her core idea was revolutionary then, and maybe even more critical now. She argued the ocean is the absolute heart of Earth's life support system.
The heart?
Yeah, the regulator of climate, the cradle of evolution. Everything. She completely overturned the old view of the ocean as just this static, passive resource to be exploited.
Okay, so she presented it as this complex, dynamic, living system.
Precisely. And she forced people to see how deeply dependent we are on it. It's a perspective shift that's fundamental to understanding climate change, biodiversity loss. You name it.
That's a huge claim. To make that stick, you need someone pretty special. Who exactly was Rachel Carson before she became, you know, the famous environmentalist?
Well, first and foremost, she was a scientist, trained marine biologist. She earned her master's in zoology from Johns Hopkins University.
So she had the scientific grounding.
Absolutely. Rigorous training. She understood the complex science, the oceanography, the biology that was emerging at the time.
And she wasn't just locked away in a university lab, right? She worked for the government for quite a while.
For over 15 years, yeah. She was with the U.S. Bureau of Fisheries, which later became the Fish and Wildlife Service. She actually rose to become editor-in-chief there.
Ah, okay. So that experience must have been crucial.
Incredibly crucial. It gave her, first, deep practical knowledge of marine life and ecosystems, but maybe more importantly, access to cutting-edge, sometimes classified, oceanographic research that was coming out of World War II. Things about deep currents, the seabed, new understandings of marine behavior.
That's a unique position, to have the scientific chops and see that frontline research.
Very few people had that combination.
Yeah.
And then truthfully, she had this amazing gift for language.
Right. The famous description, a scientist with the soul of a poet.
Exactly. She could take all that complex technical information, the geology, the chemistry, the physics of the ocean, and translate it into prose that was not just understandable, but beautiful, compelling, accessible to anyone.
So she was perfectly placed to synthesize all these new post-war discoveries for the public.
She really was.
Okay, so if we were to sum up The Sea Around Us itself, what's the core mission of the book?
I think her goal was to present this grand, sweeping biography of the ocean aimed at, well, anyone with a curious mind, to show the sea as the planet's most powerful, most influential force.
And it's a huge story, isn't it? It covers billions of years.
Billions. From the very beginnings of water on Earth, right through to the daily tides and migrations we see today. She pulls together geology, biology, chemistry, physics.
To explain how the sea formed, how life evolved within it, and how it continues to shape, well, everything. Weather, climate, even human history.
Yes, all of it. She delves into the forces that carve the ocean basins, why the sea is salty, the mechanics of waves and currents, migrations. But the ultimate aim, I think, was fostering this deep, almost reverent appreciation for this system that underpins all life.
And where does she start this epic story? Right at the beginning, I suppose, the gray beginnings.
The gray beginnings. It forces you immediately into this concept of deep time.
Which is hard to wrap your head around.
It really is. She paints this picture of the early Earth, molten rock, and then rain. Rain falling for millions, maybe hundreds of millions of years.
Just endless rain onto this hot crust.
Slowly cooling it, filling the first depressions, the earliest ocean basins. You have to grapple with billions of years just to set the stage.
Wow. Okay, so from that fiery, watery start, she takes us somewhere completely different. The sunless sea. The abyss.
Ah, the deep ocean. Total darkness, crushing pressure, near freezing cold. A place sunlight has literally never reached.
And the life there is just bizarre.
Utterly alien, almost.
Right.
She talks about the fundamental rule being economy. Extreme efficiency. Creatures adapted to survive with almost nothing.
How do they do it?
Incredible adaptations. Bioluminescence, making their own light to hunt, attract mates, or scare predators. huge eyes in some, or no eye at all. Some with these enormous dagger-like teeth to grab anything that comes by.
Just perfectly evolved for that extreme environment.
Perfectly. And it highlights the ocean's verticality, doesn't it? It's not just surface deep. It's layers upon layers of different worlds.
Worlds we still barely understand, even today.
So much of it remains a mystery.
Okay, moving back up, connecting the deep sea to the surface. She uses this incredible metaphor, the long snowfall.
Oh, that's such a powerful image.
It really is. What is she describing there?
It's this constant, slow, gentle rain of particles drifting down from the sunlit upper layers to the abyssal floor.
What kind of particles?
Everything. Dust blown from land, volcanic ash, but mostly the skeletal remains of tiny marine organisms, plankton, algae that lived and died near the surface. Marine snow, it's often called.
So it's like a link between the vibrant surface and the dark depths.
Exactly. And crucially, she explains how this snowfall, accumulating over vast stretches of time, builds up layers of sediment on the ocean floor.
Right. And those layers aren't just mud.
No, they're a record, a chronological archive, like pages in a history book, or as she beautifully put it, sort of epic poem of the earth.
An epic poem? Written in sediment.
Yes. And scientists can read these layers, analyze the chemistry, the fossils to understand past climates, volcanic eruptions, shifts in continents. The whole history of the planet is down there.
That's incredible. So if we take that history, that immense volume of water, and think about its role today, that brings us to the idea of the ocean as the global thermostat.
Ah, yes. This is absolutely critical for understanding our current climate situation.
How does it work? How does this huge body of water regulate temperature for the whole planet?
Well, water has this amazing property. It can absorb a huge amount of heat without its own temperature rising very much, much more than land or air can.
Okay, so it acts like a giant heat sponge.
Pretty much. It soaks up solar energy, especially near the equator, and prevents the planet from experiencing wild temperature swings between day and night, summer and winter. It stabilizes everything.
Like a giant flywheel for the Earth's climate.
That's a great analogy. It smooths things out. Without it, Earth would likely be a much harsher, maybe uninhabitable place.
And it's not just about storing heat, right? It moves it around, too, those big currents.
The great ocean currents, exactly.
Yeah.
Like the Gulf Stream in the Atlantic or the Kuroshio in the Pacific. They act like a massive global conveyor belt system.
Transporting heat.
Transporting that stored solar heat from the warm tropics towards the colder poles. This redistribution of heat is what makes large parts of the planet, especially in the northern hemisphere, much warmer and more habitable than they would be otherwise.
So the currents are literally delivering heat, making places livable?
They are the engine of climate stability, distributing energy across the globe. It's a fundamental mechanism.
Okay, stepping back from the specific mechanics,
yeah.
What are the big overarching messages Carson wants us to take away? I feel like one major theme is this idea of the ocean as the source.
Yes, absolutely. The ocean as the cradle of all life. She constantly emphasizes that life began in the sea. And more than that, that all life, including us, remains profoundly connected to it.
How so?
Chemically, biologically. Think about this. The salt and mineral balance in our own blood plasma is remarkably similar to that of ancient seawater.
Wow. So we literally carry a remnant of the ancient ocean inside us.
We do. That's why she sometimes refers to it as Mother Sea. It's a reminder of our origins and our ongoing dependence.
And that idea, it really challenges our usual perspective, doesn't it? We tend to think of ourselves as land creatures who happen to have oceans on our planet.
Right. But Carson flips that. She positions humanity not as the masters, but as, well, a relatively recent and highly dependent part of a system that is fundamentally oceanic.
That certainly encourages a bit of humility.
Definitely. Intellectual humility. Which connects to another major theme, deep time and planetary perspective.
Right. We touched on that with the origins, the sheer scale of time involved.
Exactly. She forces you to think about processes unfolding over millions, even billions of years. Mountain ranges rising and eroding, continents drifting, ocean basins opening and closing, sea levels rising and falling.
Things we see as permanent fixtures like a coastline
are actually, in geological time, constantly changing, constantly in flux. Nothing is static.
And understanding that time frame, that kind of long view, it's essential for thinking about today's problems, isn't it?
Absolutely. It encourages long-term thinking. We can't just focus on the next election cycle or quarterly report when dealing with issues like climate change or resource depletion that operate on much longer timescales. We need that planetary perspective.
Okay, so we have the ocean as cradle, deep time. What's the third key theme?
I'd say it's interconnectedness and systemic thinking. This is perhaps her most impactful legacy for ecological science.
How does she show that?
She relentlessly demonstrates how everything is linked. Oceanic systems, atmospheric systems, geological forces, biological life, they aren't separate compartments. They constantly influence each other.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Think about wind patterns driving ocean currents. Those currents then affect regional weather thousands of miles away.
Mm-hmm.
That weather impacts rainfall on land, which affects river runoff into the sea. That runoff carries nutrients that might cause an algae bloom.
Which then impacts fish populations.
Which then impacts seabirds or human fisheries. It's all one vast interconnected system. And action here has ripple effects everywhere else.
That holistic view really is the bedrock of modern ecology, isn't it?
It truly is. Recognizing these intricate connections and feedback loops.
Given her poetic style, the book must be full of memorable lines. Can we talk about a few key ideas she expresses so powerfully?
Oh, definitely. Her writing is studded with these insightful, almost profound statements. For instance, her way of capturing the ocean's role as both the origin and maybe the ultimate destination.
What does she say about that?
Well, she evokes this idea that the ocean holds the secrets of life's beginnings and that ultimately everything returns to it. She paraphrases the ancient idea of Oceanus, the ocean river, comparing it to the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end.
That's a powerful thought. The sea as the source and the final resting place.
It is. And then there's her view of the seafloor sediments, that long snowfall we talked about.
Yes, the archive.
She writes something like, "The sediments are a sort of epic poem of the earth. When we are wise enough, perhaps we can read in them the whole story of the past."
I love that. The idea that the planet's history book is lying there on the ocean floor, just waiting for us to learn how to read it properly.
Exactly. It captures both the mystery and the potential for discovery.
And there's one quote, or maybe an idea she added later, that feels incredibly relevant, almost chillingly prescient today.
You mean her environmental warning?
Yes. She points out the irony, doesn't she?
She does. She notes how strange it is that the sea, where life began, is now being threatened by the actions of one form of that life, us.
Humanity.
But then she adds a crucial clarification. She says the sea itself, the water, the basins, they will continue to exist in some form. The real threat isn't to the ocean per se, it's rather to life itself.
Meaning our life, human life, and perhaps complex life as we know it.
Precisely. We're not going to destroy the ocean in an ultimate sense, but we're absolutely capable of poisoning it to the point where we can no longer survive. It's a stark, sobering thought.
It really is. Which brings us to how we can actually use this knowledge. What are the real-life applications for someone reading this book today?
Well, the most immediate one is simply a deepened environmental awareness. Once you truly grasp the ocean as the planet's climate regulator and life support system, you can't look at it the same way.
It stops being just a big blue expanse on the map.
Exactly. You understand why things like ocean acidification from CO2 absorption or plastic pollution choking marine life or rising sea levels inundating coasts. Why these are not minor issues, but genuine existential threats.
And does that awareness translate into action?
It absolutely can. Understanding that even actions far inland affect the ocean, like fertilizer runoff from farms flowing down rivers into estuaries, motivates change. You might think twice about chemicals you use on your lawn or how you dispose of waste, knowing it all eventually finds its way to the sea and impacts the food web.
So it connects individual choices to global consequences.
Yes. And beyond the practical, there's a more personal application, fostering a sense of awe and connection.
How does the book do that?
Carson's writing just imbues the natural world with wonder. You start seeing the tide not just as water moving, but as this cosmic rhythm, this tangible link between the shore, the moon, the sun. It encourages humility.
A more mindful way of interacting with nature?
I think so. A deeper respect, less taking it for granted.
And thinking longer term, does the book offer lessons for planning and policy?
Definitely. The insights about promoting long-term planning are crucial. When you understand that coastlines are dynamic, that sea levels change, that ocean currents influence weather patterns far inland.
It changes how you think about building near the coast, right?
It has to. It provides a central context for decisions about coastal development, infrastructure, disaster preparedness. It pushes us away from short-term gains towards thinking about multi-generational sustainability. You simply can't plan for permanence on an inherently dynamic edge like the seashore.
That's a vital shift in perspective. So looking back at the whole book, what's the one thing that really stands out for you? The core lesson, perhaps?
For me, The biggest shift is realizing we don't live on a land planet dotted with oceans. We live on a water world.
A water world.
Yeah. The ocean isn't just a feature on Earth. It's the dominant defining feature. It's the living, breathing engine of climate, the keeper of geological time, the stage for evolution. Everything else is secondary in a way. Grasping that ocean-centric view is, I think, the most valuable takeaway.
That's a powerful reframing. For me, what stays with me is Carson's incredible achievement in bridging two worlds, the science and the poetry.
A perfect marriage, yeah.
She proved that deep scientific understanding doesn't diminish our sense of wonder or beauty. It enhances it. It gives it depth and meaning. She didn't just relay facts. She translated the language of science into the language of the human heart.
And in doing so, she didn't just educate people. She fundamentally changed public consciousness and really laid the groundwork for the modern environmental movement. An extraordinary legacy.
Truly extraordinary. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.